on. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. We'll get started. Heath, you're taking the steer.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Is this on?
Yeah. Okay. Just tap it.
You got to kind of talk pretty close to it.
Pretty close to it. Okay. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Heath Henderson, Public Works Director, and with me here this morning is Bill Wright, our Transportation Programming Manager, and Susan Wilson, one of our Capital Program Specialists. And we're here to talk about our annual update to our six-year Transportation Improvement Program. There's a lot of effort that goes into this every year, and it really helps set our priorities for the next several years. So with that, I'll let Susan kind of kick us off.
First of all, we're going to talk about some of the legalities of the Transportation Improvement Program and the Annual Construction Program for 2015-2020. Heath will talk about general information for project delivery for the Transportation Improvement Program and the Capital Facilities Plan. Bill is going to talk about the Tier 3 projects and construction starts, and then we'll seek board direction for the 2015-20 adoption. Just a reminder, the Transportation Improvement Program is a state-mandated program. It is actually driven by the Washington Administrative Code and the Revised Code of Washington. All the projects that we're working on need to be in the Transportation Improvement Program to proceed with design, right-of-way acquisition, and construction. The TIP includes a priority programming techniques, which is another WAC requirement. Between all the prioritized projects and the ongoing program projects, there has been over 130 projects reviewed. 43 projects are moving forward to design, right-of-way acquisition, and construction. And last, the board is required to adopt the Transportation Improvement Program and the Annual Construction Program before the budget is adopted. And as you're probably aware, the Transportation Improvement Program has consistency with the State Growth Management Plan, the Arterial Atlas, the 20-year Capital Facilities Plan, and then everything is put into the Transportation Improvement Program so we can begin design right away in construction.
And that's a question. The State or the Growth Management Act is intended for us all to coordinate and make sure that we're all pulling in the same direction when it comes to the jurisdictions. Yet this plan only includes our focus on the unincorporated areas. How much collaboration is there with the incorporated areas within our master plan?
Actually, there's quite a bit of coordination, Commissioner. RTC has what's called the Metropolitan Transportation Plan, and so they take all the projects from all the agencies, and they get plugged into the master model. It's the ME2 model for transportation that goes into the comp plan, and that pretty starkly tells you where you're going to have areas of future congestion, where the problems are going to arise. So when you look at a corridor like Andreessen, for instance, or 162nd that transcends the boundaries, there's an approach from both agencies or all the agencies involved to work on those corridors.
Being that we sit on the RTC board and we are familiar with the processes there, we really don't collaborate. We don't deliberate. We just simply adopt what's put in front of us, and it's just simply taking the list that comes from each of those jurisdictions and say, okay, that's on the list. So I wouldn't consider that to be somehow getting on the same page. It's just simply taking all that ingredient and just stuffing it on the page. And I wonder what kind of collaboration happens before it ever gets there.
There's quite a bit at staff level that's organized somewhat by RTC. I guess some examples might help. The Salmon Creek Interchange Project, for instance, had a combination of state work and county work that was all part of the master plan for that area. Arterials in the past, both the City of Vancouver and Clark County have worked on, include the 137th, 136th corridor. So the TIF districts are also set up to address those projects, too, on a regional basis. So the major corridors, there's been quite a bit of project or progress, really, over the last 15 years in improving those arterials.
One of the obvious things here that's a potential, and certainly early in, before we haven't really discussed with any of the other jurisdictions the possibility of this East County Bridge, that's starting out in the incorporated area of Clark County, and yet the question is, if we adopt this, that's our unincorporated area, assuming that we're going to leave some provision open for us to work with every jurisdiction that moves a whole region forward, is there some provision for us as we discover in the path forward over the next months and several years in order to make sure that we can get on the same page? And if that would affect anything here, or should I say, should it affect anything here? Should there be some kind of provision, or is there already a provision for us to be able to, if we can find a way to collaborate and move forward? I just want to make sure that we don't miss an opportunity here because we should have brought it up and we didn't.
Right. Well, yes, the opportunity is always there. We do update this annually, and we can do an amendment, you know, as needed during the year. So I think this is viewed as a snapshot in time. You know, this is kind of what we're planning at this point in time, and like some of the projects we're proposing today, recommending you moving forward in kind of the outer years, are really more of kind of a discussion item back and forth. You know, these projects we want to consider moving forward, at least put on the radar. And for example, one we're going to talk about later is the Salmon Creek Interchange Phase 2, which would be a project that would be more of a regional type project that we would have communications with the state. And so those things are always, you know, we can always add those things as projects come up.
So there are regular annual, and there's also just simply the provision for amendments as necessary as they come forward. Is the 179th Street interchange on here as well for the I-5?
Yes, we're going to talk about that one.
Great.
As well.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Now I'm going to pass it over to Heath so he can talk about details for delivering the Transportation Improvement Program and the Capital Facilities Program.
So before we get into the actual projects themselves, I just wanted to provide a little bit of backdrop on kind of our strategy and how we deliver our projects and some lessons we've learned over the years. And one thing, as a county, we're very fortunate that we have a dedicated road fund, and along with all the other counties in the state. And unlike most of the cities, which don't have a fund, it really does put us in an advantage when it comes to competing for grants and other things, and gives us a lot of flexibility in our program for how we deliver our work. And over time, kind of looking back, we've been able to use, between those agency partnerships that you were mentioning and traffic impact fees, which are considered a private share as well, you know, we typically will leverage up to 30% or more in grant funds. And I think you've seen some projects come through lately that are significantly more than that. You know, we have bridges that'll come in where it's 100% federal match, or 86%, or whatever it is. So we try to take full advantage of those activities, and I would compliment these folks right here for the work that they do in that area. We're extremely competitive and fortunate.
I just want to thank you so much. This your staff is doing a fabulous job stretching and multiplying the use of our road funds by all of these grants you're able to obtain. Fabulous job.
Yeah, they do a great job. And we really have, we look back, you know, we were talking, we've all kind of came to the county roughly the same time. We've done a lot of projects in that period of time, a lot of successful projects, a lot of different types of projects, and we've learned a lot of lessons along the way. So the next slide, I kind of wanted to show some of the lessons that we've learned. And, you know, when I first came here, I kind of call them the Padden years, the years that we built Padden Parkway, and you know, it was a project that was visioned 35 years prior to it being built, and we finally built it. But it was kind of the years where we would, our scheduling for projects, we would plan the first year, we'd try to design most of the project. The next year, we'd go out and buy the right-of-way required for it. And usually the third or fourth year, we'd begin construction. So that's kind of how we phased our projects. Well, over time, and you can kind of look back and see some of these first few projects, Patton Parkway, 76th Street, Highway 99, where we, you know, were able to deliver these projects in 4 to 5 years. And then you see we put in here the Salmon Creek Interchange and the 119th Street right now, and you can see, granted, the Salmon Creek Interchange project was a multi-agency, fairly complicated project, but it was 10 years, you know, getting that going. And it just, we started learning that due to the, and some of the red items at the bottom, you know, we've seen increased environmental regulations, increased stormwater regulations. For example, if we need to build a stormwater facility with one of our projects, if back in the early 2000s it was an acre, it's 5 acres today. So that means more property, more costs associated with that. We've also seen the federal and state funding requirements increase, just the administrative requirements, the paperwork associated with that, and the timing associated with it. And the other thing is the project locations themselves, they're just more challenging. Over on Patton and kind of the Orchards area, nice gravelly soils, all the water drains nice and easy, and then we come over like where the 10th Avenue Bridge is, you pour a cup of water on the soil and it just sits there in a puddle, you know. So it makes everything a lot more difficult. And so, you know, with 10th Avenue, we're showing, we obviously recognize this as a high priority project, and our hope is to deliver this in, you know, we're estimating 7 years. And what we're hoping is that we've learned some things with the other projects and the way we deliver them and how we move forward to try to increase the project delivery. And so we feel like we do a pretty good job with the efforts of things that are within our control. The challenge often becomes when we send everything off to a state or federal permitting agency that they're really busy and we might not see permits for a couple of years. And so it really is. We, you know, like 10th Avenue, and I don't know the exact timeline, but I think it's a couple of years we expect kind of waiting for permits, whether it's a federal permit or from Ecology. And so we try to plan for that, and we try to give them as much information as we possibly can to try to speed the process, but we have little control when it comes to that. And as a matter, on 119th Street, when we put that out to bid here a few weeks ago, we actually put it out to bid not having the Corps of Engineers permit, because they kept telling us it was coming, and it said two weeks. So we put it out with a three-week advertisement, thinking we'll have it by the time, because we didn't want to open the bids without having the permit. And we ended up having to delay how many? 3 weeks, because it just didn't come, you know. And so that's an example of kind of we try to work with them as much as we can, but at the end of the day, we're kind of at the mercy of that timeline. So
divide that into two things. One is the regulations themselves that says you need to be able to do this and this and this. The specifications that and the compliances that we need to be able to come up with. I can understand if we know what to do, then I would think that we ought to be able to turned loose to do it. I'm puzzled about why we're not trusted to do that, why we have to send this off to a central planning agency, a huge bureaucracy that delays the project for years, that are more removed from our own community. It seems backwards. Is something fundamentally changed with how we do transportation projects in this state, or it just got worse?
I don't think it's has changed that much. There's just been increased regulation, you know, with the, we're required to comply with Department of Ecology requirements when it comes to impacts to certain, it kind of centers around the Clean Water Act, in that you have, if we have an impact to a wetland or a sensitive area, then it triggers jurisdiction by the Army Corps of Engineers and the Department of Ecology, and then or it might be Fish and Wildlife. So they have a review process that they have to go through. So we believe we know what the requirements are, and we try to stay up on that. And we'll submit the information based on what we believe is current, and then they provide a review. And often it is mainly the timeline associated with that it simply could take months and months and months for us to hear back from them.
So, and is that what's new? The delay?
I would say that it's probably, we've been experiencing it more probably in the last 8 to 10 years. You know, when you look at the Salmon Creek interchange, for example, you know, that project got hung up on a fish and wildlife issue and an issue with the National Marine Fisheries Service regarding metals in the water, and it took a long time to get through that.
So we're doing everything we can to send the specifications to be able to comply, and it's out of our hands at that point. There's nothing more we can do in order to expedite the process.
You know, we talk about that a lot. We work with the folks in Environmental Services who do a great job permitting our projects, and what can we do in order to move projects forward. And we have early meetings with them and get input, and then it just seems when we go to submit that either they're overwhelmed with the work or they're just unable to get to our projects to be able to review them. So it's the timelines tend to be increasing, it would appear. The regulations, we've often said we're happy to comply with the regulations. We need to know what they are. Our hope is someday that we get to a point when there's a timeline on their side. You know, we feel like we stick to our timelines pretty closely, but there's not necessarily that same response on the other side. And the other thing is we often have to go back to these same agencies over and over and over again. You know, we've done one project, and we've got the next one right behind it, so... The other thing we try to do is keep the relationships positive and open, and a lot of times it's not necessarily the staff that we're working with. It may be just their organization and the way they're set up, which we have little control over.
Congressman Micah was here, which was chairman of the House Transportation Committee at the time. I met with him here in Vancouver, frustrated just like you are and other people about the timeline situation, and I laid out a series of ways that I thought that these projects from the federal level coming down could be processed quicker if they set a certain period of time for each of these processes, and if the parties didn't meet that, that they would be penalized by not meeting those timelines. And he thought it was a great idea, and he was going to propose it to Congress that they set up these timelines, which would help out the state, would help out the county, would help out the city right on down the process, way. And so anyway, he accepted what I give him, and I've been waiting to see if their federal timeline process has changed any since, and that's been about 6 years ago.
One thing I would add is you know, there have been efforts too, like when we receive federal funding, it's actually a good thing for us, because even though there may be some additional paperwork requirements associated with it, having the Regional Highways and Local Programs Office involved in our projects is actually an advantage, because they've set up some liaisons and people that work directly with these other permitting agencies to help kind of be a little bit of a go-between and can help move the process along a little quicker. So there are efforts that have been made in that area, and there are some advantages to those federal funds. A lot of times if we don't have a federal funding nexus and we end up with a federal nexus through a Corps of Engineers wetland permit, we don't have that luxury of having WSDOT help us through the process. So it can be a little more cumbersome. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Wasn't it copper? Copper.
Copper. So how did we alleviate that?
I don't know if I could recall all the details, but I do remember a very large meeting up in the Board of Commissioners conference room with the, would have been the reviewer, the head, the lead at the National Marine Fisheries Service to walk through the issue and talk through it with, and Commissioner Stewart was there, as I recall. We finally were able to come to a resolution, but it got to a point where it was at a very high level.
So am I hearing that it's a matter of acknowledging somebody and talking about it until they finally say, okay, you can do it?
Yeah, I think it's a For us, it's a time and response issue. I think if there's an issue with one of our projects and we appear to not be complying, we're happy to make adjustments to comply, but it's the time it would take to, for them to actually notify us, you know, what are you actually, okay, so there's an issue with metals, what can we do with our project to address the metals? And sometimes we may not get an answer. We may be told, well, you need to propose something. And we may not know exactly what to propose because it's a new issue, and so we'll have to go hire consultants or somebody to help it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is frustrating because we do our best, and there's other things where that, you know, if there's certain timelines where we may be waiting for a certain environmental approval to come before we can go by right of way. So you can, you know, normally we would do certain things kind of in parallel where we're in the force to do it in series.
And it could have very easily been one of the reforms we asked of our Department of Transportation before we gave them another gas.
Well, I think probably WashDOT is in the same position we are, you know, when it comes to delivering projects, because they're answering to these same agencies. And, yeah.
Actually, WashDOT has buffered us from a lot of the federal highway requirements, and about a year and a half ago, they kind of got called to the woodshed and beat up a little bit to get stricter with us. And we're seeing things now that we've never seen before. For instance, we have large utility components on most of our projects where Clark Public Utilities has to move the power lines, or they're putting in a water line. Well, now when we get a federal grant, all that work has to be federalized and be done to the same set of specs that our road is. And CPU wants to use their water valves. They want to use what they use. And we have to get special permission now for them to use the same valves that they've always used. So,
Yeah. We're doing our best to work within it. We can go to the next slide. So some of our, you know, we're always talking about strategies and how to do it better, how, you know, move faster. We continue to focus the majority of our work on safety, mobility, congestion relief, and economic growth. And some of the things that we're doing kind of in moving forward is we're proposing to start have more projects in the design phase, kind of a queue of projects that are some of our priority projects. But if kind of throughout the course of the process something unexpected happens, or we have a permitting delay, that we have other projects kind of behind it in the queue that we can continue to move forward. So rather than being completely stalled on certain projects, we have other efforts moving forward. So we've the past several years we've been focusing on some pretty big projects and haven't had a lot of time or focused on other projects. But given what we've learned, we think that it's a good idea to have several projects in the design queue, moving them forward. It may necessitate hiring some consultants to help us do that, which we haven't done in years, where we just go out and say, hey, consultant, help us with 119th Street. You know, we use our on-call contracts to help a little bit here and a little bit there, but it's another way that we can move projects forward. And the other thing we've talked about, too, is just alternate delivery methods. And I know we've talked and a little bit about design-build, and so we continue to look at that and work with the state agencies, and we're starting to have some people internally get trained up on that. Some of the way it's been now, most of our projects don't end up qualifying for that due to the cost threshold, but it's something that we're looking into more, and we want to develop that expertise in-house. And
got a question. It sounds like we have, because of the delay, we're not able to actually move to construction on a number of these, and the bulk of the expenditures that would draw from our road fund happens at that last stage. So our road fund must be increasing,
exactly,
waiting for
exactly
all this.
Exactly.
Yet, if there wasn't that delay, we would just simply prioritize and say, what can we afford? And you would only apply for those things we can afford.
Right.
But if there's a multi-year delay, I would think then we would just simply say, okay, put some more in the queue. Put some more in the queue. Whatever comes in, will allow us to be able to actually move forward on something, and it changes our priorities of what actually goes to construction.
It
right?
could, yeah.
So are we doing that? Are we putting more on the, submitting more applications to the state for these things so that we can get more coming back even before we have identified funding?
Are you talking from a grant standpoint, submitting from a grant standpoint, or just permitting?
Yes. In other words, if we don't have the money now, well, submit it anyway, because several years
right.
from now,
right.
that might
yes.
come through, and the other one we're still waiting for.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, we're proactively looking ahead. There's some projects that we'll talk about that we've had grant money on for years that we've been kind of sitting on. But the answer is yes. And I think you actually hit the nail right on the head there with the we do have a high road fund balance right now. And, you know, you look ahead, and part of that is that the big dollars are in construction. And if we're struggling to get to construction, you know, for example, like 119th Street, I think we have how much in road fund? $10 million of road fund to be spent in 119th Street. Well, you don't spend that until you get to construction. You know, we had hoped to be in construction right now. You know, we get to a point where you're spending $1.5 million a month in construction or more, depending on what you're doing. But every week you delay that, and we know here in the Northwest, there's not much of a construction season. So the earlier we get to construction, the better off we are. So as we're looking forward and planning, we have to watch that road fund balance carefully. And frankly, we do try to protect it some, because we know we've got that project coming up that's going to, you know, we have two projects in the matter of a couple of years that are going to spend $23 million of road fund.
I can imagine two different dangers there. One is that we receive a grant, we submit to the state, and somehow the state takes forever, and the grant expires. That's one potential. Let's talk about that one first. Does that happen? Is that a threat? Are these grants that we're receiving time sensitive, so that we can actually end up losing them because of the state's inaction?
We almost lost, or in a position of jeopardy to lose our grant on Northeast 119th Street, if we hadn't been able to go to construction this summer. It was that close.
Okay. So the other thing that we have done, and we can flip to the next slide, is within this program, we've built in a lot of flexibility within our ongoing programs. And we have, so these are programs that are outside those specific projects. So Advanced Right-of-Way Program, for example, if we have a known future project and somebody happens to be driving by and they say, hey, we're going to need that property, it's for sale, then we have money available to go make that purchase in advance of that project. We have a very large bridge repair rehab program, which you've seen some projects come through on that. Our roadway preservation program has really been, we've been viewing that as our number one priority, and I think that was per board direction a couple of years ago, basically preserving what we have. So we continue to invest a lot of money. I think we're $9 to $10 million a year in our road preservation program. We have our rural road program, so we have, I think, a couple projects coming forward in that where we're just basically reconstructing rural roads.
I assume for the preservation, we don't end up with that time problem. We're much more free to locally control our own preservation.
That's
right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's correct. We have a sidewalk and ADA program. We get a lot of interest in our sidewalk program. We do have a list that we prioritize based on some criteria that's been developed over time. And each year we try to do several sidewalk projects, and we get some grant money for those, like the schools grants and some others. And one thing, a quick sidebar, I had a really good conversation with the Commission on Aging a few weeks ago, and their real interest is in providing access for the aging community from wherever they're living to points, whether it's a transit stop or shopping center, so that they're able to freely move around. And what they're actively doing is going out into the various neighborhoods and communities where these generations tend to live, and talking with them about what do you need in order to have better access? Where do you need a walkway? Where's your closest transit stop? So they're actually going to come back to us with some actual plans, basically saying, hey, if the county could provide a sidewalk from here to here, it would really help provide access for these folks. So we're actually, given the flexibility we have in these programs, we can adapt to that, and we actually hope that we can provide them with some help in those areas, and they can help identify some of those priority projects. We also have a transportation safety program. You know, this is guardrails, signage, striping, various things we do throughout a year. And then our urban development program is our most recent program we've added for those projects where focusing basically on economic development. And as an example, we've been working with Jeff Swanson in the kind of the Barberton area out by St. John's, where we have, I think we have three projects planned there, 47th Avenue, 40th Avenue, and a connection between the two to increase the potential for industrial development in that area. So I think those are the highlights. So on to the projects with Bill.
One last question regarding timing. When it comes to the application for grants, can you apply for grants before we get the permits from the state? Can we apply for grants before we even apply to the state for the project?
Absolutely.
Great. Nine is our submission. It's not necessarily approved by the state at that point, right? We can apply?
That's good.
Well, let's talk about our specific projects. We have them lined out in what we call tiers based on the timing of when they'll be built and can be built. But before we do that, I want you to think about the TIP as a railroad track or railroad system. What you're seeing here are like stations on the railroad track, and the track here has been laid many years ago. So the train is going through these stations. We can't change that. But what we can do out in the green area is lay the tracks, you know, to point to where the stations you want to go to 6 years from now. That's really what we're primarily about today, is to get your input on those green areas. I'm sorry, the colors didn't quite come through here as well as I'd like, but the Tier 1 projects are either under construction this summer or going to construction next year. They're committed, they're fully funded, and we're just waiting to get things moving, the final stages of design on those. The blue projects are the Tier 2 projects. They're also committed projects. We're not as far as advanced in preliminary engineering, but these are scheduled for delivery within this current TIP we're talking about, this six-year cycle. So not just started, but completed within this six-year cycle. And then the Tier 3 are potential new projects. And I'd like to focus on the Tier 3, but if you have any questions on the Tier 1 and 2, you know, I'd be glad to answer them now, but we're kind of running a little bit late, so I don't want to spend too much time on these historical projects that have been underway for some time, unless you want me to.
I'm just looking for 50th Avenue on there. Now, Smith Root was, I mean, I remember when they applied, at that time, we have the responsibility to make sure that we do our part. Is that not on the list yet? Or could we could potentially be put into one of the green areas?
Smith, the 50th Avenue is on that list of 130 projects that Susan mentioned earlier. At the point of the last prioritization, it didn't prioritize particularly highly, and we have a lot of projects ahead of it. But as we move forward, anything is possible, you know. Just to give you a little background to something Heath was mentioning about the road fund balance, part of our balance is waiting for 1/19th to go ahead and so we can spend $10 million road fund there. But we're also banking funds for Northeast 10th Avenue for 154th to 164th. We've applied for a trust fund loan, but we may not get it. I mean, we have to be prepared to not have that money. And so we're banking about $10 million that will be available in the later years of this TIP to spend at that point. Because we only get like about $13 million a year in road fund that's available for capital. So where we have a large project that's going to take upwards of $20 million of road fund, we need to have some money in the bank going into that. Yes, it does. That is the bridge project.
One more thing when it comes to the state delay of things. If we're stuffing the pipeline into the state to hopefully we'll get something back, and we're being optimistic, and they send us something back that we're not quite ready to fund yet because they're somehow really successful and the one they're not hoping they'll be successful in, are we committed at that point to say, well, they gave us the permit, so the meter's running, we have to prioritize that and get that done, even though we might have the funding? Are there time frames that commit us if we get a permit from the state?
Permits end up being the last thing that we, most of the time, we'll have had the funding dialed in, and we won't even be at the permit's middle stage without the funding available, is typically how it would work. Because you get the funding early on, and then you'll get to a point where you submit for the act to the state or the federals for the actual permits to build the project, and the funding will be in place. So the partners are, they're usually all lined up by that point in time. So usually by the time we've submitted permits, we're fully committed to the project and it's funded and we're planning to build it.
I'm just thinking of that, if the bottleneck is here, you stuff more into there than what we have funding for that we discussed a little earlier.
Oh, right. Okay.
Some of those come back kind of premature, but the wrong sequence. I'm assuming we're doing that just to make sure that we're not just building up a road balance. And the question is, if we did get one of those unexpected, not quite ready, funded ones back, is there a time frame on that expires? Or can we still keep it in an order that makes sense in the right sequence for us?
I believe there are timelines on some of them. I want to say it ranges from 1 to 5 years, depending on what the permit is. And does anybody back there...
Gene?
The answer is yes, but the timeline varies, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just go back to
right.
Right. So in other words, that's not a significant problem.
No.
We're still safe to submit.
Yeah.
Optimistically.
Yeah. It's
more projects than we have funding for.
I think it's
yeah. So it minimizes the risk. Okay.
I'd say it's the rare case when we're at that point. So.
Can you use your microphone?
Can you hear me?
Well, the recorder won't.
I apologize for the graphics here a little bit. We wanted to put this up on the screen and it didn't turn out very well, so I'm going to work from this map. And the green projects, again, are the Tier 3 potential new projects. And as background, we'd like to get your input today on as much as you feel comfortable in giving us direction on, but it's not that you absolutely have to decide today. I mean, we have a number of years before these would be delivered, and if it's next spring or next summer, we come to resolution on it. That's just fine as well. But I think some of them, I guess, would be classified as no-brainers. So let's get into these projects. Up in the left-hand corner, this is the Northeast 179th Street I-5 area. We have some potential county projects that would augment a state interchange. They would all need to happen at the same time to get the full benefit of all the improvements. It's possible, though, that we could start out some of our work here ahead of the state, because that funding is uncertain at this point, and it may provide some benefit for businesses. I can't say that 100% right now, but that's a thought. Another project we mentioned here is the lower section of the Northeast 10th Corridor. This would go from 149th Street to 154th. It would have to wait for the completion of our upper section of Northeast 10th to get that bridge built before we could actually come back and build this, but we could start design on it.
On that one there, we've already submitted for an environmental
I think it was in June, wasn't it, that you submitted?
We're still saying a year before permits from now, a year and a half. We don't know.
Yeah, that's the case in point there is we don't. I'd say 1 to 2 years probably is more like, because we still have the environmental assessment, Pete. And we still have a right-of-way. So the way the funding's set up is we'll need to have our permit approval, basically approval to proceed with right-of-way acquisition and actually buy the right-of-way and then deliver. So with our own, we've asked to be able to do that. Yeah.
The next project here is Salmon Creek Interchange Phase 2. This was involves improvements to 134th Street and a westbound to southbound flyover onto I-205 southbound. Originally, this had been part of the SCIP project, but it was taken out because it was actually too expensive for us to finance at the time. Again, we're talking partnership project with WSDOT, optimistically. We know this is a very important project for development still out in this area, and WSU is relying on it at some point in the future. Right now, though, it's very nebulous as far as how we could fund it. This is Highway 99 from 99th Street. Originally, the project corridor went up to 129th, but we had to segment it for project delivery. We have gotten a federal grant to do design on this project, but we haven't started yet. And the primary concern is the 99th Street, Highway 99 intersection. It has some safety and concurrency issues that would impede development. Heath mentioned the Barberton area, and we're working with Jeff Swanson on these two projects in green, Northeast 40th Avenue, and then an east-west connector between an improved 40th and our new 47th Avenue project that will go to bid later this year. And last, but certainly not least, is the completion of the 119th Street corridor between 87th intersection and SR 503. This originally was part of the project we're starting construction this summer, but we had to cut it off again for funding reasons. We do have a commitment to complete this, and there is certainly a need from a transportation standpoint to complete this four-lane link between 72nd and SR 503. I don't think I've missed any. Next slide, please. So we're presenting some recommendations for your consideration. The projects in green, we're recommending that we start design on in the next couple years. Certainly the Rye area projects would fall into the no-brainer category, I would hope. Starting design on Northeast 119th Street and possibly delivering in the early 2020s, depending on funding. And then we have the projects in orange, very important projects, but a lot of uncertainty surrounds them. Skip Phase 2, the Highway 99, and the 179th area. And what we're suggesting there is we begin studying and discussing these projects with the folks that have the stake in them to see what we can do to either find interim solutions that don't involve WSDOT or to build some sort of consensus statewide to get those projects funded so that we can do the whole job out there. And this is really the nut of what we're presenting today, other than answering your questions, and we'd like to get your input on this sort of approach.
Highway 99, review concurrency. Steve Schulte is working on reviewing the way we look at concurrency. So before we go looking at that, we probably should review what Steve has.
Absolutely. That would be part of the mix. Because if the bar gets lowered, the problems out there may not be as significant. Although I don't know that we can count on Steve much longer to carry the ball.
He can't leave until it's done.
Isn't that new concurrency method pretty well defined? What are we waiting for in just simply adopting it?
Maybe Steve can...
Commissioners, we have a public hearing on August 19th when we'll bring the concurrency ordinance proposal to you, as we've discussed in the work session. We've been through Planning Commission now. They passed us through with no changes, and we'll see you on the 19th.
It's on track.
Right. I might add, I think on the 99th Street work, there really isn't a mobility issue, that much a mobility issue on Highway 99. The 99th Street and Highway 99 intersection, there is a mobility issue. But once you get north of that intersection, there are safety issues, there's pedestrian movement issues, there's left turn lane issues, but the mobility is pretty good on Highway 99 north of 99th Street.
Mobility using that interchangeably with concurrency?
Correct, correct.
I have a question. Of the choices that we have there, if we're going to pick A or B, I would think that residential versus business, we would prioritize business because that invests in our community and provides more revenue to run everything. Is there much of a choice between these that would, where we have more business versus residential?
Well, I think projects 4 and 5, that we're working with Jeff Swanson on would probably have the most immediate benefit.
And that's what we already call that pretty much no-brainer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the ones that are not no-brainers, to sort them out, I would think that the priority, if we have a this or that choice, we would prioritize more business investment, more jobs, economy investment.
And I think in our criteria that we use, there is some... You know, there's an economic portion of that, and we could look at that and see how they came out. But I know, you know, 119th, for example, there's some residential zoning in the area, but it's really a through movement. People, you know, that's a really busy road for people moving from point A to point B. So, and same with 10th Avenue. There's a residential area in there, but we're proposing, you know, future development on the north end of 10th Avenue. So to some extent, I think, you know, looking at the green ones that are there, I think they kind of fit in that category.
Category of more...
More business-related movement of goods and people. It's typically where the projects are, yeah. Yeah, and I think that one definitely, you know, there's a lot of development proposed potentially in that area, and I, you know, what we're proposed, there's a couple things there, and I know that it was discussed a little bit with RTC has some money to do some work on, and one of the things that we've talked about with them is looking at the I-5 corridor and doing a study there on the various interchanges, because there's other crossings in the vicinity, and as far as where to put what we're trying to do is get a little more focus on this interchange, because it's kind of the next one as you move north in our area that needs some improvement. And with a study that shows that, there's more apt to make partnerships with the state, try to get it elevated on the state's radar, and get some funding for it. So I think that's what we're hoping, is to have that on our radar and start moving down the steps that we need to in order to get that one moving forward.
In that area, the county portion of that, I would assume that we wouldn't put something in there that would have to be torn out when the other goes through, but that we would basically do what would be logical to do, and finally when that part, that missing puzzle piece gets installed, it all works.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's important that RTC has recognized this as a priority for the region.
Right. Right, right.
We actually have a couple county projects identified out there in that circle, and the question is really how much good would they do to relieve congestion before the interchange is fixed. One of them would move Delphill on the north side to align with the signal that goes down to the fairgrounds, because Delphill has to be moved west to get it out of the way of any new footprint for an interchange. But how much mobility benefit we get from that is probably pretty minimal at this point. And then the second project's on the east side. It would continue 15th Avenue and then arc it over to 10th. And that's very critical long-term arterial and also for the development of that northeast corner. But in the interchange area, is it really going to have a lot of effect? I don't know that it would. I think we need to really look at that. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But how soon, how important is it to do in this tip, or whether, could it wait another 10 years perhaps? Yeah. There you go.
As for direction, I have a lot of confidence in our staff here. The leadership here, Public Works, you guys do great. So I would put a lot of value on what you recommend, what makes sense.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for your support. Appreciate it.